Hey, folks, I hope you're enjoying this podcast. You know, I've done over 650 podcasts, so I must enjoy doing it, and I hope you enjoy listening. But if you enjoy stories about the people behind the technology you use, you should also check out the Greater Than Code podcast. They focus on the human side of software development. They've got stories of inclusivity and accessibility from the people you don't normally hear from. Search for Greater Than Code in your favorite podcast app or check out greaterthancode.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Karen Catlin. She's got a new book out called Better Allies. You can check it out at betterallies.com. She most recently served as a vice president in the office of the CTO at Adobe Systems and has been in tech for a while. How are you?
I am so well. Thank you for having me. This is so exciting.
I'm happy to chat with you. I've actually read one of your other books, which was called Present, A Techie's Guide to Public Speaking. And I had your co-author, Purnima Vyashankar, on the show in show 501. So people should check out that show as well.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Present, A Techie's Guide to Public Speaking is all about leveling up your skills around giving presentations or giving talks externally. Super important for our careers in tech. And so thanks for the shout out. And I would definitely encourage your readers to check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you've got another book, and it's focused not just on hiring and retaining a workforce, but keeping them and making sure that they don't walk out the door.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what Better Allies is all about. It is about pretty much everyday simple actions anyone can take to create a more inclusive and engaging workplace where really anyone can do their best work and everyone is just thriving and there's a great buzz about the workplace. So that's the focus of my second book. Yes. And as you mentioned, there's a whole chapter on hiring and casting as wide a net as possible in the hiring process.
There's supposedly a tech shortage out there. And in researching this, I went and I Googled tech shortage and I got an interesting reply. I got interesting results. The first one was the tech talent shortage is a lie. And then the next one was the tech talent shortage is even larger than you thought. So now I don't know. Do we not have enough techies to hire?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, think about your experience at Microsoft, and for your listeners, wherever they are, their experience hiring. I think that most people probably think it's pretty hard to hire tech talent these days. I'm in Silicon Valley, and there's such a shortage, and it's hard to hire the right talent. So just anecdotally, I think that the tech talent shortage is alive, not a lie. And and as I've done research too, there are definitely different studies that show up and catch my eye. One is last summer, I was reading something on LinkedIn, and they were reporting that by 2020, which is only like a year and a half away, maybe you know, round up to 2 years, but by 2020, there's going to be over a million tech jobs that are going unfilled because the talent isn't there. And then I've also known the CSO website for chief security officers reported that by 2021, there's going to be 3.5 million cybersecurity jobs that are going unfilled. Okay. So I think that there's probably, you know, even if you think that those statistics are maybe exaggerated or not quite accurate, there's still something there. And we don't have enough talent to fill all these tech roles that we need in our companies and frankly, to solve problems around the world that we know need solving.
That's a great point. And we can look at it as a gap in that there aren't enough people to hire, but we can also think about the people who have talent right now might want to develop their talent internally and stay at the company and move into a different job that's up into diagonally within their company.
Oh, absolutely. And I certainly hope that our tech companies are investing in their talent they have, that they want to keep growing the talent. I mean, face it, tech moves so quickly. And if you rely on the skills you had last year, they're not going to be the skills you need next year, right? So I hope that the companies are investing in talent, but it probably is not happening at the right pace, definitely.
No, it doesn't. I recently had someone who's a friend of mine leave the company, and on the way out in the kind of like final email, she was a Black woman in tech. She said, "You, meaning you, the tech industry, are spending so much time trying to get us to come work at your company that you're not putting any work into having us stay at your company." That idea of not focusing on retention, but having so many recruiters running out there looking for talent really hit me.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Retention is so critical. And you mentioned she's a woman. Is that, did I hear that right? This
yes,
friend of
she
yours?
Happens, yeah. She happens to be a Black woman in tech.
A Black woman in tech, even more elusive, I'll call it, because if you look at the statistics that are being reported, the demographics that get reported in various diversity reports, we definitely see that there's hardly any people of color working in tech. And so I know that hiring those people, there's a lot of focus on bringing people of color of tech, as well as people from other underrepresented groups into our tech companies. But if we're not retaining them, how short-sighted is that? And we can kind of have to think about what are our budgets that we give to the recruiting team to hire these talent versus the budget we're giving to whether it's learning and development or other activities to create the really inclusive environments where people feel like this is awesome and I want to be here. And by the way, I want all my friends to come work here too. This is such a great place, right? Are we making the right investment there? And I kind of think not. That one story you shared underscores that. But it's really why I wrote my book. I wrote this book, Better Allies, because I really do want everyone to realize there are things that we can be doing to create these workplaces, this culture where people feel that I can thrive here, and I am thriving, and I'm doing amazing work, and it's fun, and I'm, you know, it's just like it's the place I want to be, and I don't want to leave. And I'll just say there are definitely companies out there that have that reputation, but I think they're few and far between.
What do you say to people who might have made it this far into the podcast or have heard stuff like this before who are saying, well, I just want to do good work. Like, this isn't about gender. This isn't about race. Let's just, you know, the code compiled. Let's check it in.
Yeah. So cool. The code compiled and check it in. That's great, but is it the right solution? Is it the right solution for the customer needs? There's so many stories about technology gone wrong, perhaps because a diverse group of people were not coming up with the solution. There's stories about, I'll share one or two quickly. Like the early airbag technology, for example, it was built by a team of all men who used the standard height and weight of an average adult male to build the early airbags. And the tragic story there is that as those airbags were deployed into cars and as they deployed in accidents, they worked really well for the men who are of the standard height and weight. Mm-hmm. But the tragedy is they were killing women and children. Okay? So you kind of wonder, well, if there had been some women involved in that engineering team coming up with the first airbags, would the same solution have been put into place, or would a better solution have been pointed out? We don't know. We can't go back and redo history. But that's just one example. Another example is, more recently, is the Apple Health Tracker. You know, when it was first announced, the Apple Health Tracker, it was, I think the marketing was, you know, all the health metrics you ever need to track are available now in our health tracker. All the metrics you need. Except they forgot one. Do you know which one they forgot?
What's that?
It's the one that women have been tracking since the dawn of time.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Our reproductive calendar. They forgot to include that. And so half of the population that was using the Apple Health Tracker could not track the most fundamental of health metrics. Now, I don't know what the demographics were of that team that was creating the health tracker. But again, I kind of wonder, like, if there were more women involved, wouldn't that be the first thing they'd think about in terms of a health metric? I don't know. So anyway.
No, that is really interesting, because there's so much more, though, if you think about what it means to – how wide is your net going to be? I'll give you two very, very brief stories. My boss runs a huge team at Microsoft on Visual Studio, but he happens to be one of the few, for whatever reason, people that is red-green colorblind. So inevitably, he's the one that finds the problems with our colors and icons and UX when it's red-green issues. Gray refactor isn't quite as exciting as red-green refactor.
Thank goodness you have him on board, yeah.
And then the other one was on the Apple Health, early versions of Apple Health. I was putting my blood sugar in with my continuous meter every 5 minutes, but the database didn't think to scale that far. You know, you couldn't do that. It was too much.
Too much data. Yes.
Too much data. Yeah. So diversity is diversity of thought, diversity of background. It's medical. It's veterans. It's
everything.
These different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's that diversity of experience, life experiences, as well as personal needs that all comes together, I think, to create a truly vibrant product development team is solving the right problems. Yeah.
Mm. Well, what do you do if you have a small team? What if you have four or five people and you don't want it to look like the Power Rangers? You know, I've talked about artificial diversity. We don't want to make a team of Power Rangers where there's five people, one of each type, because A, it's artificial, and it's not the effective team. It's just an attractive team.
Well, or maybe it is an effective team. I don't know. It could very well be the right team for your needs. Yeah, the important thing, and I must admit, I'm not a fan of quotas per se. We shouldn't have some idealized Power Ranger team. I've never heard it talked about that way, but I love that. That's not what I'm all about. I'm about, if you are building a team, why not cast the widest net possible? Cast a net that is going to be broad so that you get a variety of talent coming in to the interview process, so that you are evaluating a variety of candidates and that you're choosing the right person for the team for your needs. Why not cast the widest net possible?
That's a good point. So this isn't about, this is about getting as many people into the interview door as possible. You know, if you interview three people and it's all, you know, 50-year-old guys, maybe interview six people.
Right, exactly. And not just getting them in the door, but then interviewing them in an appropriate way that is objective, that is not biased. And when you actually make them the offer, how can you do that in an unbiased way? And how can you onboard them so that they feel, hey, I was hired because of what I'm bringing here and not because I'm the token somebody, the token person of color, the token woman. They didn't lower the bar for me because I've got what it takes. So it's the whole process, the whole pipeline of how we hire and interview, attract candidates, interview, and then hire them.
Hmm. Can we break down some specifics? For example, I hear a lot about whiteboard interviews, and people are still doing interviews where they say, here, go and sort this, or do a bubble sort in C on a whiteboard, which is not something you'd ever do in your job, but something that we apparently ask people to do in interviews.
I know. And I do think that it is a much better best practice to have a realistic interview, to have an interview that mimics what the life is going to be like once they walk in the door. So if it is the kind of thing that you are whiteboard coding every day and you're doing that in a team, then that's fine to have that be part of your interview process. But chances are, as you said, it's not. It's just this artificial thing we've done. Maybe it's because we were put through that ringer when we got our jobs, so we're going to pass that along to somebody else, right? Pay it forward. Maybe it's because we don't know what else to do. You know, another thing that we do, and I think it's just because of habit, is leading up to the whole interview process when we're writing job descriptions. I mean, how many times have you written a job description? I'm sure you've done this many times, but you kind of copy and paste the last one. The last one might say, you know, open source experience, nice to have, and a bachelor's degree or equivalent in computer science, and, right? We copy and paste. And it turns out that as a result, we end up having a lot of extraneous requirements in our job listing. Extraneous requirements in terms of, do you really need a college degree to be a software engineer? Well, I happen to have a computer science degree. I love the training I got. Mm-hmm. But the boot camp grads or years of experience might surpass that or might be the equivalent. So ask yourself, with every requirement you're putting in a job listing, would I say no to the best candidate ever who came through the door if they didn't have that college degree, right? Mm. And if the answer is, you know, I'd sort of soften that requirement, I'd waive that requirement, then why even put it there in the first place? Open source experience, the same thing. Yes, there are some jobs that absolutely require you work in open source. And so, of course, that would be a valid requirement. But so many of our engineering jobs don't really require open source experience. It's just sort of a way for us to vet a candidate. Maybe we can go check out their contributions, the code they've forked. Maybe we can go see what they've done in GitHub. But it really doesn't tie to the job per se. So why put it in there if it's really not a requirement? And in fact, in my book, I talk about why not try to just have five requirements for any job that you're listing? Really narrow down what you're asking for and what you're looking for to five. And five is kind of an artificial number. Could be six or seven, doesn't really matter. But try to minimize it. And the reason to do this is there are studies. In fact, there's this famous HP internal study from years ago that studied the promotion velocity for women and men at the company. And they found that women applied for a promotion internally when they had about 100% of the requirements for the job. They applied only if they could say to every single requirement, yep, 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 all the way down. By contrast, men internally applied for these promotions when they had that 60%. When they had 60% of the requirements and they kind of probably thought in their head, I've got enough, I've got more than half. I could go for this promotion now. And that study, it's kind of infamous. It was an internal study. It hasn't been published externally, but the study's been repeated by other researchers, and they're finding very similar things, that women will apply for things when they know they can do the job 100% of the time. They've got all the things they're looking for. And men, you know, will apply when they've got most of them.
It's so, you don't want to believe these things, but they are true. It's literally yesterday, I was having dinner with my niece. She's an accountant. She's just discovered at her job that she's underpaid. She's the lowest paid of the five accountants that are there. She was recently looking around at job listings, and she just exactly described what you described. She was looking at the list of things she could do, and she had check what? I can do all of this. She basically didn't realize she was as competent as she was until she found a job description that described her job exactly. And she had previously felt like, well, I'm never going to ask them for more money because I would never be able to find another job. Yeah. But then she realized, wait a second, I can do this. I could find another job. So now she's going to go and ask for her raise. And I encouraged her to not ask as a raise. I encouraged her to ask it as a correction.
A correction. Oh, good for you. That's great advice. I love that. And it's just so interesting. I love hearing these anecdotal examples of this in the wild, so to speak, in real life, because it does happen and the research backs it up. So a best practice then to attract more women and to cast that wider net is really simplify your job descriptions to the bare minimum, to the things that you absolutely are going to be interviewing for and that you require for the job, and leave out all those nice to haves.
Yeah. Job descriptions have become so long. They're almost longer than your resume. I've seen page long job descriptions. Someone recently showed me a job description that asked for a master's degree in lieu of experience. And I thought that was an interesting and weird way to do things. They said, well, we want you to have 5 or 10 years experience or a master's degree. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure those are interchangeable.
I don't either. I don't know what they were thinking, but perhaps they had a method to their madness there. Yeah, I don't know. Don't know.
Interesting. Okay, so you said you need to give fair interviews.
Yes. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, please. Hey, friends. This is Scott. But this isn't an advertisement. I just wanted to take a moment in the middle of the podcast here to ask you to help me grow the show. When you visit our sponsors, you help me out. You help me, in my spare time, build this show and tell people about it. But what I really need from you is that you tell people about the show. I love when I see tweets from you, when you tweet our guests, when you talk about the show. If there's anything you can do to tell your friends, family, relatives, coworkers, colleagues about the show, that'd be great. If you have an idea for someone who should be on the show, let me know. And above all, review the show. Review it on your blog, review it on iTunes, review it on Google Play or Stitcher or wherever you can, because telling people about this show lets me continue to do this show with over 600 episodes. Thanks a lot.
So quick story about how things sometimes are not fair. Well, years and years ago, early in my career, I think I had about 6 years of experience at the time. I had been working as a software engineer, and I actually was married. My husband, Tim, and I had met at work, and we had almost identical resumes. We had gone to the same school, got the same computer science degree, worked at the same company right out of school, using the same technologies, the same frameworks. Like, it literally, our resumes were almost identical. And we decided we were going to move to Silicon Valley. We were living in England at the time. We were moving to Silicon Valley, and we applied to a few places and found one company, very large tech company, that was building out a team, and they were hiring a handful of software engineers. And we said, perfect, let's apply. We've worked together before. Wouldn't it be fun to do that again? So we applied, and we both got interviews on the same day. We were seated in side-by-side conference rooms, and literally the interview team talked to me, you know, one person talked to me, and then for half an hour, and then moved next door and interviewed my husband. And it went back and forth like that all day. It was a pretty exhausting day. At the end of the day, when my husband and I were driving back to our hotel room, we started comparing notes, like, how'd you do? How'd you think it went? You know, those types of things. And I remember him telling me, like, Karen, that was the hardest interview I've ever had. They asked such tough questions. I don't know how I did, that type of thing. And I remember thinking, huh, that was the easiest interview I've ever had. They didn't ask me any tough technical questions. They were so superficial. They skirted my just the level of my experience. And I realized what happened is they lowered the bar for me. They didn't think that I, as a woman, had the same technical chops as my husband. And they asked different questions, even though we were back to back, side by side. And the interesting thing is that that company ended up making both of us offers. And I decided to say no because I didn't want to join a team that lowered the bar for me during the interview process. Like, what would it be like if I actually joined the team? What would the quality of work assignment be that I got, or the credibility I'd get in a team meeting or a stand-up, right? Like, I just didn't think it was going to be there. So that's one example of how the hiring process, the interview process itself, can be very biased. So the best practice to contrast that and to approach it differently is to make sure we really have objective criteria that we are interviewing against, perhaps even having very structured interview tactics where there are questions designed up front ahead of time that you're going to be asking each candidate consistently, and some rubric for measuring the answers, measuring those responses, so that the bias can be taken out as much as possible. So that's, for example, how the bias creeps into the interview process.
I think that last bit we should kind of double click on a minute, because I think that's really, really functionally practical advice that someone who's listening can use, like, mm-hmm. right away. Write down some questions, talk about them as a group, yeah. decide that, yeah, we'll have an interview. The interview can go in wide-reaching different directions, but these are the 15 questions that we are going to ask everyone. They are good, solid tech questions. They're unbiased. They're not trivia. They're not right. writing a bubble sort on a whiteboard. They are representative of the kind of stuff that this person's going to do every day.
Right. They aren't your favorite movie. They aren't, you know, like, whatever. I mean, it's focused on the business and the business needs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. You know what else I would love your listeners to ask if they is add a question. So number 16 to that list of 15, ask the question, how have you contributed to a diverse and inclusive workplace? Just ask that question.
What would you do if some people would just stared into the middle distance and didn't have an answer to that?
Well, then you know, and you can decide if this is important to you. But if it's important for you to be hiring people who are going to add to the inclusivity of the environment, even if they are part of the majority now as, you know, a white man. If you're looking for people who are going to make your workplace even more inclusive, why not start when they're walking through the door and ask that question? If you don't care, don't ask it. But if they stare into the distance, then that's going to be very telling.
Yeah. I think that one of the things that helps me as a white guy think about things is I really call out the difference between diverse, which is a thing, which is maybe the who, and inclusive, which is the how.
The how. Love that. Yes.
We did a Thanksgiving meal recently, and we had some people come who were vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Inclusive behavior was making sure that they had vegetarian food to eat, right? Mm-hmm. We weren't trying to put together a diverse Thanksgiving, but we wanted to be an inclusive one. Otherwise, we'd have our guests literally just eating stuffing.
Oh, gosh, we put sausage in our stuffing. That wouldn't work very well. Anyway, yes.
I don't eat pork, so that would be a problem.
Yeah, that would be a problem. There you go. What a great, great thought. I don't know. I love that. I love that an inclusive is the how and the diverse is the who. That's great. So yeah. Simple and so telling. Yeah.
You have a section on performance feedback, and this has been a problem amongst, you know, kind of my manager friends, of people not feeling that their performance feedback was fair, getting mm-hmm. feedback and then talking to a peer and then finding out that they were given entirely different feedback even though they were doing the same jobs. Mm. How do you keep feedback private while still making it fair to everyone?
Yeah, I don't know if that is the concern that I have in terms of private feedback. Okay. It's more that there's research showing that we tend not to give difficult feedback, constructive feedback, you know, the feedback that helps us really learn and grow. We tend not to give mm-hmm. that difficult feedback to people who are different than us. whether that is across gender lines or race lines or some other demographic line, we hold ourselves back. Here's why. As a person who's white, I am white, I might not want to give that really tough feedback to a person of color on my staff because I might think, oh my gosh, they're going to think I'm racist if I show up real tough here and I'm giving them this feedback. They're going to think I'm racist. For a man, he might not give feedback to a woman because he might think she's going to think I'm sexist if I give her this feedback. So it's just easier to hold back. And there's research that shores this up and proves it out. Stanford's Clayman Institute did a research study of reviewing thousands and thousands of written annual performance reviews from tech companies. And this is what they ended up finding is that the difficult feedback went more to men than women. Women just didn't get as much because chances are their boss is a man. That's how it works in tech. The other thing they found is that the length of the performance reviews was different. Men got longer, more words in their performance reviews. So there was more feedback given. And also the third thing is that men were more likely to get feedback about a skill they needed to learn that would further their career, tech skill in particular. So the feedback we're giving, I think that's where the equitable part is let's make sure that we are writing performance reviews of the same length, that we are, for every review we're giving, we're making sure that we're giving tangible ideas of tools, techniques, job skills that people should be learning to further their career. And that when we do have difficult feedback, we're not holding it back.
That's really significant. And I think that there are very likely people who are listening who disagree with aspects of this. And they should kind of go back to the science and go back to the work that has been done in this space that is fact-based and say, listen, the facts are that these are how people are, people feel this way, people are perceived this way, people are receiving reviews of this such and such a length. And if you go back to the original thing you said about interviewing, have specific questions that represent what they're going to be doing on the job, you can apply that to performance feedback. Are you giving them feedback on what their job is?
Exactly. It's objective criteria. It's a way of measuring people objectively to help prevent the bias from creeping in. We all have bias. It's okay. But we can put these best practices in place to help prevent that bias from affecting creating an inclusive workplace, from affecting people's careers.
Mm-hmm. So the book is coming next month, I think, January 2019.
That's right. That's right. I hope at the beginning of the month, but let's cross our fingers. There are a few things still to be worked out, but we are on track for January 2019. Yeah, super excited to get it out there. And if you don't mind, I'll give myself a shout out. People can go to betterallies.com and sign up to be alerted when the book is ready, read more about it. I also have a newsletter that's weekly called 5 Ally Actions, where I share 5 like simple everyday things people can do in a workplace to create a more inclusive culture. So just a little dose of inspiration every Friday. So you can sign up for that newsletter also on my website, betterallies.com.
And then I want to give you a shout out and say go to betterallies.com/about. In your bio, there's a bunch of great URLs that people should follow. There's, of course, the link to your newsletter that you commented on. There's your Twitter handle, Better Allies, but also your TEDx talk on Women in Tech, The Missing Force. This idea that we've got 50% of the population just there waiting to be hired. Let's get them involved. There's a huge group of people that we can call upon. And then the reminder, of course, that your book with Parnima called A Techie's Guide to Public Speaking, Present. She was on episode 501, and that's another great book that they can buy from you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for all those shout outs. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thanks for chatting with me today.
My pleasure. It was so fun, Scott. Thank you.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.